radio in the world. Today's episode is called...
It's my Nathan Explosion imitation. This is the Freedom Fiends. I'm Michael Dean. We got some other people here. We got Diana Kyler. Are you there? Are you safe?
I think she's infected.
We got Davi Barker. You there, Davi?
I'm here.
Yeah.
I have not been contacted by the zombies.
Okay. If anyone doesn't know, if you weren't listening last week and don't know what we plan to have as a show topic today, it's zombies. This is going to be, this is the first in a three-part trilogy of three nights in a row of all zombies all the time on the Freedom Fiends. And it's actually, there was a prequel last week, so it's going to be four altogether. Tonight is Night of the Living Worms. Tomorrow night is Dawn of the Worms. The next day is Day of the Worms. And I just want to start by saying, spoiler alert, I think we need to say that at least every half hour, because we are going to be discussing things that if you haven't seen every single episode of Walking Dead, then you're going to be left out. So
let's do a coverage spoiler for every zombie movie in existence too. If you haven't seen every zombie movie, you might be spoiled.
And read all of the affiliated zombie graphic novels, zombie, the weapons of Walking Dead on internationalfirearmsmoviedatabase.com. Let's see, what else? What other associated? All the podcasts. What else is there, Gabby?
There's novels. There's radio shows.
Yeah. The Zombie Research Society.
Yeah, I'm a member.
Of course you are.
I got that guy with a name badge and everything. I keep it in my wallet.
You're a registered zombie lover.
Card carrying.
I am. I am.
People, don't register your zombies. The government will take them away. They will use the lists to take away your pet zombies. And there are pet zombies, actually.
Oh, yeah. In Shaun of the Dead.
In Walking Dead. No, in Walking Dead, there's...
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Michonne's pets.
Andrea has pets. The little girl. Who's the little girl that feeds them rats?
Oh God.
What is her name? Not Penny, not Megan. It's
Eloy 1 and Eloy 2. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh, gosh. She's crazy.
Is it Susie?
No, it's not Susie. It's
the girl is creepy and horrible.
The governor kind of has pet zombies, but he keeps them in an aquarium.
Well, yeah. His daughter is a pet zombie, too. Oh, I want to say happy birthday to Kyle, our board op. It is his birthday.
Happy birthday, Kyle.
So what did you say about the zombie voices in our show that we're talking about, Walking Dead, Davi?
Oh, in Walking Dead? Yeah, the zombie extras are all silent. It's all filmed with no noise, and then they go in and dub the zombie noises in later, and all the zombie voices are done by Glenn Mazzara.
Who's that?
He's either the showrunner or the special effects guy. I don't remember.
People don't know what showrunner means. The first time I heard that, and this is what a lot of people think, they think it's the messenger on a TV show.
Like, really? It's not obvious? It's the guy that runs the show.
It's basically the producer of the show. Yeah. Like the day-to-day producer on the set.
Yeah, but producer also implies the person who finances a production. Mm-hmm. Right. And that would be the studio. And so they came up with a new term for it. Yeah. I guess.
Producer is such an ambiguous term. And then there's a associate producer or ASPROD, as they call it. And that can be anything from like, you know, whoever's dating one of the producers to like, you know, somebody who, you know, paid for some of the zombie makeup on an independent thing. Associate producer.
But you said associate producer. I thought you said a socio producer, like a person who produces but doesn't feel empathy for other people.
Isn't that all of them? Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, producer means something different in music than it means in film and TV. In film and TV, producer generally means the money person. And in music, the producer kind of does what the director does in film.
Hmm.
You know, a music producer is sometimes it's somebody who has involvement in the money, but it's generally the person who sometimes acts as the A&R scout, you know, artist and repertoire, the talent scout, but often is not that person. They're often hired by the record company or by the band to come into the studio. And I mean, the easy way of describing it is they're kind of the liaison between the artist and the engineer, but it's often more than that too. It's often like they'll actually be involved in kind of song rewriting and arranging harmonies and saying like, okay, that guitar solo is too long, take it out, that chorus is good, repeat it, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the engineer is the guy who runs like the mixers and stuff like that, right?
He's the guy that runs the mixers. Yeah. He's the knob twiddler. Oh, the knob twiddler.
I like know nothing about any of this. So.
Yeah. Well, on big, big production, big budget productions, I've only ever been involved in one, and it was a low budget, big budget production. It was the record we did for Warner Brothers. The producer was Bill Laswell, and he had an engineer whose name I don't remember. And he actually had things that I've never dealt with before because they seemed like, you know, guitar pick butler or something. He had what's called a microphone valet. He had something called a drum doctor, which is actually a guy that comes in and sets up the drummer's drums and tunes them like between songs. You know, not just like tunes them like you tune a guitar, like to the notes they're supposed to be to, but like tunes them to the notes he thinks they should be to, and is also involved in the placement of the microphones and the choice of the microphones and the room that the drums are in. And we hated it. Like with the record we did on no money, where our drummer just set up and played, the drum sounded better than the one where, you know, Warner Brothers hired a guy who hired a drum doctor. I thought that was ridiculous too.
Drum doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause our drummer, like he tuned his drums really low. So they sounded really boomy and, it was not conventional. And the drum doctor was like, no, that's doing it wrong. You know, and tuned him up like a normal drummer would. So humans and their machinations. So, the showrunner is not the same on every episode of Walking Dead, is it? Tell us about that.
Well, the directors and the writers sort of change from time to time, but I think they do have a consistent showrunner. If that makes sense.
The showrunner is also sometimes the creator of a show, isn't it?
Yeah, sometimes. Although in this case, I think you would have to argue that Robert Kirkman is the creator of the show, mm-hmm. because he created the comic book and he is still a writer on the show.
Yeah.
I love him.
It's his world, you know.
The creator of a show and the showrunner of a show can establish it and then go away and the feel can still be consistent and people can still like it if it's done right. Like I would say Nima and I are the co-creators of the Freedom Fiends and he's gone for all intents and purposes. And I am the showrunner of the Fiends, but you know, the shows that Derek does without me on Sunday nights, they totally feel like a Fiend show. I mean, he even like says things that we say and has the same kind of mood. And it's different than the mood of his show where it's kind of more, you know, it's more a little more tyranny, but it's way more just news of the day and commenting on it. Whereas the Fiends is more kind of laughing at it all and mm-hmm. commenting on it. And he always puts in a redemption in the third act now and things like that. Mm-hmm. And he sings along and yeah, it kind of feels like a Fiends, even though I'm not there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man. I built that.
There you go.
Yep.
Without Obama's help.
Yeah. Cause you know, eventually I'm going to be too stupid and senile to do this show and you guys can do it. That's what I'm trying to train you to.
No, you won't. Look at your dad.
There's so many names involved in this show. So Greg Nicotero is the makeup guy, and he does the zombie voices.
Hang on a second. My dad would not be good on talk radio right now, Diana.
I know, but he's still got it all together, though. Like
just because you can walk doesn't mean you can talk well. Zombies can walk. Okay. So tell me about the showrunners, Davi, and the kerfluffle of if you ask the wrong question at a zombie con.
Right. So Frank Darabont was the original showrunner of the first season of Walking Dead. And due to mysterious creative differences, he was taken off the show.
In rock music, that means drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they always say. It means drugs or money or both.
And it's always in quotes.
Yeah.
Creative.
Well, so they say creative differences and they won't say anything else. And if you ask them about it at conventions or things like that, they'll take the mic.
They'll shoot you with Daryl's crossbow.
So I think it might be some kind of settlement or something that nobody talks about why Frank Darabont left the show.
Probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They don't want to risk like getting sued if they say no questions or something.
Although I've heard rumors that he might be on the spinoff, which would be kind of fantastic.
There's a spinoff.
Yeah, there's a spinoff. What is it? I think the working title right now is Cobalt, And it's either being filmed in California or Pennsylvania, but it's essentially the story of, it starts with the story of the time that Rick was in a coma. So it's the outbreak and like watching the spread of the infection.
Is it
Robert Kirkland alluded to that on Talking Dead, I think.
Is Saul Goodman the lawyer for the attorneys in the spinoff?
I think he might be patient zero.
Oh. So speaking of Talking Dead, do you know who Mark Maron is?
No.
Okay. Talking Dead is a talk show about Walking Dead. They also had a Talking Bad about Breaking Bad. Who's the host of it? It's the guy that does the talk soup, right?
Oh, man. I don't know his name.
Yeah. But it's,
he's a Nerdist guy.
Yeah.
Nerdist.
It's like him and usually somebody from the show and then some like B-list movie star or comedian sitting on a couch talking for about 10.
So it's Chris Hardwick, and it's often the celebrities on it are often nothing to do with the show. Like they had Marilyn Manson on.
Oh, that was a train wreck. A train wreck.
Okay, Mark Maron is this comedian I really, really, really like a lot. He's he has a lot in common with me, and he basically plays himself in his show. It's called Maron, and and he's a stand-up comedian who's kind of like, it's that thing now of like the really good stand-up comedians kind of get their own show, like Louis C.K., where they play kind of a exaggerated version of themselves with their real name. And it's like that. And in it, he is a like bitter 50-year-old man with a bunch of cats who does a podcast. And I'm like, what's not to love, And on this show, His agent always gets him jobs he doesn't want to do. Like he wants to do something important, like, create like there's one where they're trying to get him to do a show based on somebody's Twitter feed. Like it, it's a takeoff on that like S my dad says thing, like somebody created a thing like dumb stuff my dad says, and they want like Mark Maron to play the son in the TV version of it. And he's like, yeah, I have a feeling this isn't how The Wire was created. But he wants to do important things, but he keeps getting these ridiculous things that he isn't qualified even to do. And one is going on Talking Dead, and I'll tell you about it when we get back. Worms. You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or status you haven't defooed yet. Because if we don't laugh, the status win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily rustle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience trauma, blood pressure, or laughter lasts longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends. And I do want to say that we're going to talk about what's wrong with musicians. We're going to fit that in here with the zombies. But first, I want to tell you that Derek actually did some coding on FiendPhone, and we did a test today. And it's not ready for primetime by far, but we actually did something. And if you go to FiendPhone.com, you can see a little picture of what we did. And I'm going to write some text about how it went. And it is the first brick on the road down making FiendPhone. FiendPhone.com. Yep. So I was talking about Talking Dead, and there's an episode of Maron where his agent gets him booked on Talking Dead. And he's like, what is that? I don't even watch Walking Dead. And he's like, all you need to know is it's about zombies. And he goes on there and they're like, so Mark, and he finds out that like the guy that's the host, the other star that night who's on there is somebody that hates him, that feels like he's messed him over in the past, and they have some big beef, and they talk in the dressing room. Then they go out and like the other guy that he's had the beef with before is like, so Mark, what do you think about when Andrea, has the revolver in her hand and she pulls the trigger and you hear the brass go on the ground and, you don't really know what's happened, but if you have a good idea. And he's like, I don't know, zombies. by the end of the show, the other actor, the host, and the cameraman are like all yelling at Maron and calling him a poser. It's pretty funny.
Okay, I gotta check this one out.
Yeah. You can get a little closer to the mic there. You're kind of far away.
Okay.
I'm driving you insane. You're like, you told me to get away.
Yeah. I know.
I really like self-referential media. I like it when shows refer to each other. Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah. It's also cross promotion. It's a synergy, I think is the term for that. Yeah. So tell me about your theory about musicians.
Yeah. So this, I kind of already knew this, but this occurred to me over Thanksgiving break when my family was talking about Taylor Swift. So first off, if you're a musician and I've heard of you, you've probably jumped the shark.
Yeah.
My theory is that a musician has jumped the shark when they begin writing music about their own fame. And
I'm going to tie this back to Walking Dead, but go ahead.
Okay. But so her big song recently is called Shake It Off or something like that. And she was on The View, which my mom watches. Another piece of evidence that she's jumped the shark. And she said, what's this song about? And she says, well, it's all those haters that like get on Twitter and Facebook and they don't like me. And I'm just saying, like, you got to shake it off. I'm like, oh, OK, so this song is about you dealing with your fame.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah, you know, the average person buying a record,
everybody picks on Taylor Swift.
Doesn't really. I mean, this is going back to the 70s. Like, I remember Rolling Stone talking about this. Like, you know, you're washed up when it was something like that. And one of the things was like, you know, you're writing blues rock-based blues songs, crying about how lonely it is in the 5-star hotel with room service. You know,
right? Exactly.
Yeah,
because you've lost touch with your audience. You're no longer writing a kind of like universal human drama. You're a category.
Yeah,
now. You are a class of people who enjoy fame.
You're complaining about first world problems, like first world rich guy problems. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So she's so popular, some people don't like her, and she just doesn't know how to deal with that.
You know, there's the thing of people loving bands that are not popular, and then once they're popular, like they're like, oh, they sold out, I don't like them anymore. Right. Yeah. And then there's people who claim to like them before they were big. You know, I actually had an idea for a money making thing was to make T-shirts of bands that are famous that were underground for a while, but make the T-shirt the same as like a copy of the T-shirt from their first record and then distress it so it looks really old for people to pretend that they were into the band before.
Oh, yeah. Pre-distressed fashion is a big thing.
It is, but I don't think it's specifically done with, you know, the like REM's independent record or Nirvana's.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's done with like 8-bit video games and 80s cartoons and things like that. But yeah, no, I've never seen it for old band. Although you do see it, and like Target has a whole line of like
Target
90s
totally
bands
yeah.
and 60s and 70s
yeah.
bands.
Yeah, but it's like people, it's, you know, it's like.
I have a Kurt T-shirt from Target.
It's REO Speedwagon
shirt, right?
It's REO Speedwagon shirts for people who weren't born when that band broke up, too. You
know? Yeah, that's
hey,
true.
It's kitsch.
I had an actual REO Speedwagon shirt that I sold on eBay.
Cool. So what I was getting at with this was, I'm not saying I would do that. I would not. That's lying. But yeah, all right. You guys talk.
T-shirt fraud. That's what that is.
That is.
What is?
We'll be back.
Wearing a T-shirt before you could have owned it.
Oh, true.
No,
yeah.
Selling it would be.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. All right. Worms.
Dang it.
We'll be back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
I'm gonna have to not do that a lot because the zombie voice does take a toll on your voice. I have found, and we're
it's
doing
like death metal.
It'll just make me sound sexier.
What's that?
I said it'll just make me sound sexier.
Yep, and Yeah, we're doing a three night stand here, all zombies all the time. Tomorrow night, I think Chandler's on with Davi and I, and then the next night it's Davi and I. Unless Diana wants to come back and do more zombies, it's up to her. So we're talking about how bands, you know, people like them more when they're starving, and there's a couple reasons for that. One is when a band is starving, they're kind of like forming their sound. They're not well known yet. And they're also not responding to the pressure of the marketplace. Like the way I've heard it described is a band has 5 years to write their first record and 6 months to write their second record. You know, like once they're signed, they're in the tube, they're in the machine, they're in the pipeline, and they have to keep producing stuff or they don't stay signed. And they have millions of people or thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, you know, demanding they do more stuff and paying attention to everything they do, where before they were able to like kind of exist in this creative vacuum and just not a vacuum, but like, you know, soak up influences and soak up life experiences and have things that people who aren't millionaires on Learjets can relate to when you write songs about it. And I think that that's kind of changed with movies and with music for two different reasons, but both involve with the industries becoming more mature. With music, people can now instantly share their stuff, almost to the point where bands tend to become known to the public before they're ready in a lot of cases. But, you know, definitely like they don't have to struggle for 5 years and get permission from a major label to have a chance for the world to hear them. And with TV, I kind of think that TV has matured to the point where they don't, they were making really stupid mistakes with TV for a long time. And some TV is still making those mistakes. But I think that TV has kind of caught up with like the 70s movie making, you know, where they had lower budgets and gave, you know, unknown people like, you know, Peter Fonda, you know, $1 million and said, make a movie kind of thing. And they're kind of right. Doing that with TV now, like giving the creative people a lot more control, you know, and people will do things like, you know, spend $50,000 of their own money and make a pilot and then pitch, you know, send that to get it to a TV company, usually cable, and they'll order 6 episodes or something. Like the first season of Walking Dead was 6 episodes, you know, and I think it was they were wanting to see if people liked it or not. So,
right.
Yeah. So you don't really have the kind of like, it used to be like by the time someone was a TV producer or a TV writer before, they were totally jaded. And now it's kind of more like an independent studio kind of thing where people come from outside, have great ideas and bring them in. And then, you know, the cable network already has, you know, the cameras, the writers, the editors, you know, the pipeline in place to make it a lot more streamlined, I think.
Well, I think there's also a sense in which like modern studios are sort of desperate for ideas. And so they're trying to strike this balance between like establishment people and sort of, curveballs, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And it's also, it does have to do with technology, with digital filmmaking, because it used to be, if you had a great idea for a TV show, you couldn't make, you know, you couldn't make a reasonable facsimile of it for a pilot on your own. And now you can. And it's kind of gotten to the point where, the media companies are more distributors than they are content creators, you know, and in cases like with AMC, like they're distributors that also have a bunch of industry professionals on hand, like the prop department that reuses the props from show to show that we talked about. But, you know, where if they have someone who comes in with a great idea, you know, I've really wondered how people get into Hollywood and TV, and, you know, not that I want to, like I turn it down at every chance I get. I turned it down recently to possibly be on a reality TV documentary, you know, on Discovery Channel. And I pitched some of my friends instead because I didn't want to do it. I don't want to do that. It's kind of weird too, how like documentaries and reality TV, which are my most favorite and least favorite forms of filmmaking, have kind of merged, you know, with like arguing gun-toting, crab-catching gold miners of Alaska, you know, series like that. I don't know. What say you about any of this, guys?
I have a question about about people starting their own TV shows, like the first episode, using their own funds and then hoping that somebody will pick it up. Are there any examples of that that you know of?
I know that there are Hollywood directors who have directed big budget movies for their first movie. Like they make a student film. And then like one that comes to mind is Arlington Road. Did you guys ever see that movie? It's great.
Haven't seen it.
It's Jeff Bridges and I'll look it up.
I mean, it took decades, but Evil Dead is kind of an example.
Yeah, it was like it was a self-published graphic novel,
wasn't it?
Oh, yeah,
the first one, right, yeah.
Well, even before the original Bruce Campbell Evil Dead, there was a student film called like Lost in the Woods or something like that was the same plot, except that Ash was Ashley and she was a female character. And now, like, Evil Dead has spun off into, like, the Army of Darkness movie and then the Evil Dead remake. And now they're talking about doing an Evil Dead TV show.
I can think of another example, too, is Beavis and Butthead and everything Matt Judge. Is that his name? Matt Judge?
Yeah.
Matt Judge got his start doing a short.
On MTV.
He got on it. But it was that weird Sick and Twist, Spike and Mike's Twisted Film Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Which I used to go see in San Francisco.
Me too.
In person.
That was awesome.
Really? I wonder if we were ever at the same place at the same time. I went and saw it when it was at the Palace of Fine Arts in the 90s.
I saw it at this little indie theater in like Santa Clara.
Okay.
You know, South Park is another example. Those were originally sort of like weird little clip art YouTube videos.
Well, South Park is, I know a lot about how South Park came to be, and that's an interesting story too. But the, so Spike and Mike's Twisted Film Festival was a...
I think it's Sick and Twisted.
Sick and Twisted Festival of Animation. They also had just the Festival of Animation, but the Sick and Twisted one was more popular. And Matt Judge? Is that his name? Mike Judge. Right?
Mike Judge.
Yeah, Mike Judge had a short called Frog Baseball, and it was basically Beavis and Butthead without being named that, playing baseball and killing frogs. And
yeah,
it was a hit, and it got the attention of MTV, and they developed it into Beavis and Butthead. And you know, the character, the neighbor that they're always annoying, mm-hmm. is basically Hank Hill.
It is Hank Hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But the guys who do South Park, they actually made musicals, like. With movies with actors. Like they made that Cannibal the Musical. You ever seen that?
No.
It is they spent like $50,000 their own money making it, shot it on 35 millimeter film or 16 millimeter. I think 35 millimeter film. It has an orchestral score that they wrote and arranged and the actors all sing in it. It's basically like, you know, Mormon pioneers eating each other. That's the plot.
Okay.
And it's a comedy. And they sold it to, who's the guy that made the Toxic Avenger stuff? You know that stuff, Davi?
I know the stuff. I don't know the name of the creator though.
Yeah. He actually did a blurb for my, let me pull out my $30 film school book because he does the blurb that's on the cover of it. And I will just tell you his name. It's holding up my monitor. He wrote the one on the other one. He wrote the one on the other version. All right. But, they went to Hollywood to meet him because they were fans of him, and they were like living in their car and sending these tapes out to people. And, you know, nobody liked it. They were like, this is too weird. And it was South Park stuff. No, it was before South Park stuff. They were sending stuff out, and they finally got a meeting with the guy from Troma Films. And, you know, he said, yeah, come by. We'll have a meeting and I'm interested in distributing this. And they thought that their ship had arrived, and you know, the address, like they pull up, they're living in their car, they pull up and the address is like a Del Taco or something. You know, they thought it was going to be some big skyscraper, but it's, you know, it's on Hollywood Boulevard, but it was a taco place. And they went in and he didn't even buy them lunch. It was Dutch treat, you know? And he said, I'll put this out on VHS. You know, I think it'll be popular. And they're like, cool. How much money do we get as an advance? And he's like, you don't get any advance and you'll probably never get any royalties from it. But it's you should do it. And, you know, they did it and it got popular. And then they made a little short of South Park that was done with felt cutouts and stop animation camera, you know, one frame at a time. And they sent it out as Christmas cards to Hollywood producers, and somebody saw it and it started getting copied and sent around. And that's how they got the attention that got them to do South Park.
Cool.
Lloyd, that's a guy from Troma. You don't know Troma?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's Troma Entertainment, Lloyd Kaufman. And he wrote a book about filmmaking that was part of the inspiration for my book, $30 Film School. He wrote a book called Make Your Own Damn Movie, which is a really good book about low-budget filmmaking.
Groovy. I said before that zombie movies are the thing to do if you want to do low-budget stuff. I wonder how much that translates to a show like Walking Dead, because I know they have a huge budget for like props and sets and makeup and all that kind of stuff. But
they don't spend a lot. They don't get like name actors. And that's kind of a – and the people are probably making more by the fourth, fifth season now. But that's kind of a thing now that is a trend in film that I really like, is it used to be you had to get – a name actor for people to watch stuff on TV, but on cable, they're already paying for it. So they tend to watch it anyway. You don't need name actors. You just need good actors. And there's a lot of them.
I like that a lot better. I prefer an actor I don't know, because it makes it that much easier for me to immerse myself in the character.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah. I didn't know any of the actors in Walking Dead when I went in the first season, for sure. I recognized Herschel from like he'd been like in other TV shows or movies or something like that. But yeah, I mean, they were all new
stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And Daryl actually, he did the, that movie, Boondock Saints.
Oh yeah. Daryl. Yeah. But I meant Dale. Dale was, Dale and Andrea were both in The Majestic.
Oh yeah.
Andrea was in The Shield. The actress that plays Andrea was in The Shield.
Yeah.
I forgot
about them. Yep. Yeah.
They've also got like the kid, Noah is the kid from Everybody Hates Chris.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, Joe from The Claimers is a famous actor who is often a sort of villain type.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
They're getting some names on there.
I don't recognize.
We'll be back with Talking Worms after this trip to the market.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Roads. Tell me about roads. No, don't. Okay.
I hate roads.
You know, I will say this. Who will build the
roads? Anyone who builds them.
Apparently, the roads still work after the government's been eaten.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
It's just, you know, they get covered with some leaves and stuff, but it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to drive more carefully, but you do anyway, because there should be zombie crossing signs everywhere. So I got a couple announcements. One is, I talked briefly about this thing that I never talked about on this show, because I talked about it on a weekend show, but not a nighttime show. So I did get contacted by a producer for reality TV who does a bunch of stuff for Discovery Channel and those, you know, kind of somewhere between documentary and reality TV. And she was interested in putting me in the show because I'm a libertarian who does a talk radio show. And I was like, nah, man, I don't want to do that. And I, you know, hooked her up with some other people. Just saying. And it's kind of funny because Davi and I were talking a couple weeks before that about the whole thing with Colbert. And I said something like, I said, if the mainstream media ever wants to point a camera at you, run in the opposite direction. And then I later explained what I meant was not necessarily, you know, don't deal with the mainstream media, but be picky about it and know they're not going to portray you the way you want to be portrayed. They're going to betray you rather than portray you. So yeah, there. Right. I was true. I was true. I kept to what I said I would do. You know, the thing is, like, I got signed to a major label when I was in a band, and it was kind of shocking. Like, when we started, we had no idea we would ever be able to be signed to a major label. And then we actually didn't get signed because of Nirvana. We got signed because of Jane's Addiction. We got signed at the same time as Nirvana. And, you know, a lot of bands in punk rock, like, claimed to hate major labels and said, like, man, I'd never sell out. I'd never be on a major label. But they never got the chance to. And I got the chance to, and it didn't work out the way I planned. And it wasn't good. And, you know, the label wasn't good to us. And we were kind of our own worst enemies, too. So I've learned from that experience and learned that, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean your ship comes in when, you know, Discovery Channel wants to feature you in their documentary, and it may work against you. So it's not necessarily a thing of having, I have integrity. It's more like I've been there, done that kind of stuff, and I've learned from it. I will say this, though, about, and there's probably no money in that. They probably don't pay you for that anyway. I will say this about major labels and major corporations versus independent labels. Independent labels and independent media companies tend to go out of business owing you money. Like, Warner Brothers gave me all the money they said they'd give me. And, you know, a bunch of distributors that we were on, like, went out of business with, you know, 200 copies of our records that we never saw again. So there's that. And the other follow-up I have is we talked about Ben Weasel. Remember that, Diana?
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about this guy, Ben Weasel. And we thought we were reading something by him. It turned out to not be
by him.
But we talked about him and talked about how fun he was and how he was kind of the brutalist of the anti-PC brutalist of punk rock back in the day. And I sent him the episode and he listened to it. And he wrote me back and said, I'm listening. He said, he's not a libertarian. Phooey on libertarians. I hate politics. If my ex-bandmates actually asked to remove that photo on the site, that's incredible. What wimps. I did not write that rebuttal. You're right. We were all about peeing off punk rockers. I'm still doing it. He said that guy Fat Mike is a clown. And he wanted people to vote for John Kerry, not Obama. That was the election before. And he said, John Kerry, Lurch from the Addams Family. And he said, I don't remember you staying at my house. I don't think I might have found you a place when I booked your band. He did book our band. And he says, I don't know where you got the crabs. And he said, thanks for the tip. I don't get most of the other stuff you're talking about when you're talking about libertarianism. It sounds like a cult to me.
Right.
So I just wanted to read that on the air because that happened. Yep. So we'll be back.
Good old Ben Weasel.
We'll be back with the cult of libertarianism.
Lesbertarianism.
Is that lesbian Presbyterians?
It's lesbian terrorism, obviously.
Lesbian Presbyterians. All right. Yeah. And the movie I was looking for, Arlington Road, was Tim Robbins playing a terrorist who lives next door to a guy named, played by Jeff Bridges. And it was the director's first film, but his second film, his first little film, was nominated at Sundance, and that's how he got his foot in the door.
I have seen that. It's a great film now.
Really, really good film. All right, we'll be back with hour two of the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the market.
Worms.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at TrueShibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. TrueShibes.com.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com. Freedom Fiends with night one of three nights of all zombies all the time. Because, you know, we get tired of talking about the fact that Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist and his feet stink. So we're talking, I'm talking with Davi Barker and Diana Kyler about brains.
Yeah. Although it seems like our motif of all tangents all the time has superseded the all zombies all the time.
Yeah. I mean, really, I think it's one of the selling points of the show, but it's, you can't really pitch that to like regimented conservative radio and say, yeah, man, our show's like, you know, it's just like Rush Limbaugh, except we want to have heroin in vending machines in privately owned middle schools. And, and you know, we don't hate all the Muslims and, we just want to talk.
It's a little bit of Rush Limbaugh, a little bit of Seinfeld. It's a show about nothing.
It's a show about everything. Well, I actually describe it to stations as a libertarian general interest show. But general interest is a format of talk radio, but we don't really fit in it because general interest generally means you're kind of politically centrist. You talk about whatever's in the paper and you focus a little bit on politics and a little bit on sports.
I don't know. That sounds like it describes The View, except for the sports.
Yeah, but they're not
talking
centrist.
About celebrities.
They're not centrist.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So I love this show, Walking Dead. Do you guys love this show?
I love it.
I am infatuated with it. Yeah.
With every fiber of my being. I've been a fan since the very beginning. And I remember when they were advertising it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I will be watching that show.
See, a lot of people brag about, you know, I was into that show when it started. I brag that I don't get into shows until their fifth or sixth season because then I can have the just total brain overload of watching 100 episodes in one week.
That's how I was with Breaking Bad, actually. I didn't start watching that until it had been on for a while.
Michael, I kind of envy you because like you sent me an email about a week ago when you're like, there's this guy from the government who has a cure to the virus. And I'm like, oh, man.
Like, you don't know yet.
But like,
Spoiler alert. We got to give a spoiler alert every half
spoiler
hour.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler
but
alert.
I was spoiled that on that lying. Plot line. I was spoiled on that plot line by the comic. And so as soon as Eugene appeared, I already knew he was a liar.
Oh, no.
And so, yeah, I never got to watch the show believing Eugene was real.
Yeah.
Well, I suspected that actually from the beginning.
I kind of suspected it after about an episode of him. But you guys get to brag that you're totally immersed. I get to brag that I had the most joyous viewing experience, a more joyous viewing experience of this show than you did because you had to wait every week for it to come out.
Yeah.
I just watched, my wife and I just watched it all in like four evenings. Yeah. That's five, cool. Four and a half seasons worth. Yeah.
I didn't take a shower watching Dexter like for days.
Filthy. All right. So I want
to
talk.
You also get to watch and not be constantly comparing it to the comic book.
I didn't even know there was a comic book until
today. I've never read it. I sent my dad the compilation.
Yeah. Hmm. So I want to talk about some errors in this show. And I wonder in this day and age why they still have errors with stuff like this because.
I know.
You know, it wouldn't.
They don't think people will notice that those kind of things.
They know that the way people consume media now is obsessively, and people form, you know, fan sites.
And they can watch it over and over.
And they do three nights of radio in a row about it. So, yeah.
But they must just, like, seriously not care sometimes. Like, you were talking about he says, turn the safety off. And you're like, that model pistol doesn't have a safety.
Yeah. Like, and it's not.
The actor mimes turning a safety off.
And you hear a
click.
You hear a click. Yeah.
Right. Which means that, like, why didn't that actor, like, look at the prop and be like, where's the safety on this prop?
Well,
was that Andreas?
It's in the first scene. No, in the first, the shootout.
No, it's one of the deputies
at the beginning.
In the shootout.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
Rick says, you know, because you can tell that guy's kind of like the least competent cop with them. And he's like, you know, make sure you have a round in the chamber and your safety off. And he chambers a round correctly for that weapon. And then you see him mime turning off a safety, and you hear the sound a safety on a gun would make being turned off, but there's no safety on a Glock. And the thing is, like, it's not a Glock, you know, the police model Glock is not an esoteric gun that people wouldn't know about. It's one of the most common firearms in the world. And you'd think somebody on that set would say something, but I think what happens now too, is they have a lot of people, they have consultants on movie sets and TV sets that show people how to correctly handle a gun and, like, put it to their shoulder and look like they're not doing that for the first time, but they don't teach them how to do it safely. And they overlook things like that. Maybe it's like the gun guy knows that the gun handling guy knows that on the site, on the set, but doesn't dare say it because there's too much politics going on, or I don't know, man.
But the actor must know. They must have discovered this problem while filming the scene.
Well, that's true. There's nothing to click. Yeah,
the fire engine scene gets to me. That you can't run a hose on a fire engine if the engine isn't running, right?
Yeah, I thought about
I didn't
that.
Know that.
I wasn't
you told
sure,
me, you
but
told
I thought
me
about
I'd
that.
Have to have suspension of disbelief for the fire engine, and I just thought it was the idea that it would dissolve the heads and bodies of zombies. But they seem to, you know, when they've been zombified a long time, their heads are pretty easy to destroy. So I didn't have a problem.
Which
with
doesn't
that.
Make sense. They
yeah,
keep saying,
you explain
like,
that to
the,
me, Dobby.
The zombies get softer because they're decaying. Your bones are the last thing to decay. It doesn't it doesn't get easier to puncture a skull.
Yeah,
prehistoric.
A skull is the only skulls are the only thing that survive of a lot of times of a skull of a body decomposing over.
But here's the thing: that was a real fire engine, which means while they're filming this scene, somebody must have realized, oh wait, we have to start the engine or the hose won't work.
So is that a safety feature in fire engines?
I don't know.
We should ask Mark
the
Edge.
Break?
Mark Edge is
know,
a volunteer fireman.
Firefighter. Yeah, yeah, we could ask.
That's a safety
but they did.
Feature.
They had someone from the fire department as a technician on site so that they could use the prop.
You know, I got to say, Ian always gets on Mark's case for not being an activist, and Ian is a hyperactivist, and it's cool. But Mark is right to point out that Ian, and we're not talking about characters on a TV show. These are people we know. Mark Edge from Free Talk Live.
You or
know,
are he's, they?
He doesn't do the same kind of street activism Ian does, but I would say Mark walks his talk as a libertarian more than most libertarians, not more than Ian, but he's actually, you know, they always say, like, well, without the government, who would put out fires? Mark is an unpaid volunteer fireman for his town's, you know, he wakes up in the middle of the night and goes out and fights fires in the snow. So
sure does.
There you go. And he's been posting photos of his pigs, which he calls the senators. And I think that is one of the best pieces of activism out there.
We had Nick Hazelton on the other day, and he just got some baby piglets, and Lou was calling them bacon seeds. Yeah.
That's funny. I saw pictures of Mark putting out a fire, too.
Well, cool. Who would put out the fires without the government? Mark.
Mark.
Exactly. Mark Edge.
Yeah. All right. So another problem I have is zombies get dumber as the show goes on.
Yeah.
In the first season, they can use tools. They can pick up a rock and break a window. One of them climbs a fence.
Of them climb a fence.
Yeah. In the later season, all they can do is, like, walk into a fence and keep walking until there's enough of them to knock it over. Like cattle. Yeah.
They start squeezing through the fence, the actual fence.
And
they
run too. They run in the first season.
And I don't really see an explanation for it. I mean, you could say maybe it's the disease mutating over time, or that maybe I'd believe, but, you know, people have said, oh, well, the longer they're zombies, the dumber they get. But
I still don't buy that.
There are new
people
becoming zombies right. all
the
time.
You have the outbreak in the prison. You have the school bus that gets overrun. Like, there's all these instances of, like, fresh zombies that behave like third and fourth season zombies. So, I don't buy it.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, more problems.
There's also the little girl who picks up the bunny in the opening sequence of the first episode. And there's the wife that turns the doorknob. And I like that sort of like intricacy and individuality for certain zombies. I think that's cool. And I wish they did more of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually remember when I watched that first episode again and I saw her pick up the bunny, I had forgotten that she'd done that. And I thought that was noteworthy considering I'd never seen zombies do individual things like that, you know, in the following seasons. And so maybe that's curious.
Maybe they focus grouped it and decided that the zombies were too highbrow for TV. They didn't want to dumb down the show.
They were too sophisticated.
Dumbed down the zombies. All right. More problems I have. More gun problems I have. All right. In Atlanta, at the construction site, Rick fires 7 shots from a 6-shot revolver without reloading.
Does he really?
Yes. The 7th is in the tank when he's in the tank and he shoots the zombie soldier. Mm-hmm. Zombies use a brick to break the glass. I mentioned that. Okay. When Andrea kills herself with the revolver, you hear brass hit the ground. Revolvers do not manually expel brass. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. That whole scene is sort of odd for me.
Why?
Yeah. Because she spends so much time talking to him while she's dying.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I found that whole scene really awkward because there's no sense of urgency.
There seems to be a big sense of urgency, even with a loved one who's going zombie, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, what's the black guy's name that is the first guy Rick meets out of the hospital?
Out of the hospital. Morgan.
Morgan. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why Morgan doesn't ask Rick to shoot his wife, you know, cause he sees his wife zombified out there. She's suffering. She also seems individualistic and intelligent too, because she keeps coming to the house where he is, which isn't even it's not even their house. Maybe she can smell him or something, but she also looks like she has some little light of humanity left in her eyes.
Right. And that's why he can't shoot her.
Yeah.
Is because there's this like recognition.
That's what friends are for, is to shoot your wife in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. I mean, that's why Tyrese killed Bob.
Yeah. I love Tyrese. I love him so much.
I like the disclaimer of Mark and Ian are not zombies in the show we're talking about. It kind of sounds like it, because you talk about, you know, we talk about these shows like, you know, old ladies talked about their soap operas in the 70s. Like, oh, did you see what Rochelle did? Oh, that whore. You know, like they know them or something, you know? Like, no, we know Mark and Ian. They are zombies that we know.
The other thing is Morgan's wife followed them, because when he talks about when he describes Dwayne dying, he says that they were in another house.
Yeah, they're not in their house.
Oh, that's right, because she kills him.
Right. He goes down into the basement and tells Dwayne to wait upstairs. And then the wife comes into the house and attacks the son while he's in the basement. Mm-hmm. So
they were in a completely different house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to debunk.
What are the odds?
Yeah. When we get back, I'll debunk one of Davi's theories about this show. It's actually not Davi's theory.
I can't wait for that.
It's one that you quoted of other people that you didn't really agree with. But I'll tell you why Daryl's speed dealer was not Jesse or Badger or Skinny Pete.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach, and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is, and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. That would be awesome. Let's do that.
Freedom Fiends. So this is Mr. Michael Dean, and I've been working in my garage building welding together my Pope Mobile for Porkfest that I'm going to use to protect myself from everyone that hates me because I've been pointing out the foibles of all the libertarians for a year. I said I was going to use all the fiends as human shields, but they didn't like that, so they said I should build a Pope Mobile to drive around Porkfest.
You made me choke on my vape.
You're atomic punk.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm
all right, thinking. So there's a theory on the Walking Deadosphere talking about the theory is that that Breaking Bad is a prequel to Walking Dead, and Walking Dead is a sequel to Breaking Bad.
Right.
Tell us why people say that. I'll tell you why it's not true.
Well, there's a whole lot of overlap. Like,
it's props. They have the same prop company and they reuse them.
They have the same prop department, and as a result,
Gale's chemistry set coffee machine is the coffee machine of what's the guy's name? Who's like
Milton, the governor's right hand?
Yes, Mr. Molyneux.
Brain
of course,
or
Mr. Molyneux. Yeah,
right. Okay. You also get Glenn driving. Walt Jr.'s charger. You also get
Walt Jr.'s charger gets burned up, doesn't it? Doesn't Walt?
We don't talk about that.
Walt burns it up in a parking lot and then throws money at his attorney and says, "Fix it."
Yeah exactly. That must have been a replica. That must not have been a real charger they blew up because they still have the prop. There's also the blue meth that appears in Merle's prescription bag.
I didn't see that until I watched it again.
There's some other things too. I don't remember them all, but they don't. From a continuity perspective, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, because the president, there's a news scene. Somebody's watching TV in Breaking Bad, and Obama is the president. So it takes place, you know, sometime in the last 6 years, and I don't think there's any indication that Walking Dead takes place in the distant in the not too distant future.
Unless you count the CDC, because the real CDC is nothing like that.
Even the outside
of it? In Atlanta? What does it look like?
The CDC is not a laboratory where people explore things. It's a bunch of regulators sitting in committee regulating other people's laboratories. So, like, the idea that people are doing experimental vaccines at the CDC is not the case.
I gotta say, the whole inside of the CDC, it was really cool. It was very
it was cool.
It reminded me very much, like, all of a sudden this show for two episodes felt like a 1970s like future sci-fi, like, you know,
Andromeda Strain,
not too distant future. Yeah,
yeah, it feels like Raccoon City in Resident Evil.
I don't know what that is.
Well, it's this like underground facility where they do this like experimental like secret science that causes the outbreak or whatever. But yeah. I also like the idea that the best thing that all of the greatest minds of the government can think to do is kill themselves. I think that's abandon
their posts. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's how we get to liberty, is not with a disease, but just, I mean, there's a theory that the money will run out and everyone will abandon their posts, but I don't think so. I think they can manipulate the shell game of money so the government still has money to pay police and things. Did you know that a lot of times now, the government will completely pay your student loans if you become a cop or a school teacher?
Wild.
Isn't that horrible and socialist?
Yeah, that's weird.
It really is. I mean, you can't just like get your teaching degree and then say, ha ha, and quit. You have to like go actually be a teacher for a couple years. But yeah, there's actually ads on the radio in my town that are, you know, from the, they're playing nationwide. It's the ones that are made that are fill for when they don't have ads, you know, the government produced, like, you shouldn't smoke. You should be nice to your children and not hit them. You know, you should pay your taxes, those things. Yeah.
You should be a cop or a teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. You should be like the two enforcement arms, the education arm and the enforcement arm of the tyranny. All right, so there's another indicator on these blogs in the blogosphere, the deadosphere, the theory that these two shows are in the same universe, overlapping somehow, is Daryl says something. He's talking about his dealer, and he describes a guy who kind of talked like Jesse or Badger or Skinny Pete, But he said that the guy had a kid, and none of Badger and Skinny Pete never had a kid. Jesse had a girlfriend that had a kid, but I don't think the kid died. You said maybe he went with the kid later after the show, but the kid got murdered in front of his eyes while he's in the van, remember?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He didn't
I guess
have a
the
kid.
Only ones that could have a kid are Skinny Pete and Badger could grow up to have a kid.
Yeah, and Daryl said he'd never been out of Georgia. So, you know, unless mm-hmm. those people came to Georgia with their kid and set up shop, I don't see it happening. So we'll be back.
Yeah.
Go ahead, real quick.
Well, the Blue Meth made it to Atlanta, apparently.
I don't see that happening either. It's too tasty for people. They like it. It's a regional delight.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Claimed. Claimed. Davi, please explain claimed in our show.
You know, it just occurred to me, Joe is kind of the Chris Cantwell of Walking Dead.
Who's Joe? I don't remember who Joe is.
Joe is the head of the claimers. They're that group of people that sort of take in Daryl when he's out by himself.
No, the guy,
and they have
Joe,
this rule.
Joe has more going for him.
He does, but here's the reason is he's a maximum retaliation guy.
He kind of reminds me of the governor too, and they're both kind of alpha males, and Cantwell is like gamma or something.
So the reason so here's why I say this. So Joe is he's a propertarian. He has a kind of like libertarian feel to him.
He will shoot you for a paperclip.
He will shoot you for a paperclip. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So they get property rights. They're a group that is based on sort of property rights and this sort of like contractual agreement to like run together and abide by these rules. But any violation of these rules is a death penalty.
Yeah. It also like it isn't even based on like the claimed thing isn't really like homesteading. It's more like pioneers landing in a new land and just that's mine, you know.
Yeah, and they also claim things that other people already have. Like they were claiming Daryl's jacket before he was even dead.
I was waiting for them to claim people, like see a woman and say claimed, you know.
Yeah, well, I guess that's
I'm
what
sure that would have happened
because you got that with like Gorman and the cops at Grady Hospital where they're like claiming the new patients.
Yeah, yeah, that was that hospital was really creepy and was. I really think that in a collapse of society, the cops that weren't just shot on the street, and I'm not saying people should shoot cops, and I'm not talking about any political thing. I just think cops would be open season because so many people hate cops and have for so many decades, and especially lately. I think in a collapse of society, people would just be using them for target practice. But the ones that didn't die from that, I think would start to form their own little governments, you know, in a building and take prisoners mm-hmm. and make them work as slaves, like in the hospital, like the cops do. Yeah,
sure. Because they're an authoritarian. They also have, the thing is they have an internal government, right? Like there's a fraternal order of police with rules and customs and hierarchy and, you know, pecking order. And so that would usurp whatever sorts of governmental checks and balances exist on the police department now. And they would become little fiefdoms.
Yeah. Yeah, which kind of leads into, you know, I was actually thinking that they should have put in a scene. This would have been kind of funny, and I think a lot of people who watch would relate with it, even if they're not gun people. I think they should at some point come across a cop who's still in uniform. Like, Rick has stopped being in uniform, like, probably because his uniform. I think he just got sick of it, of being the cop. And
he gave it up. They made a whole big deal about him taking off the badge.
Yeah, he wanted to live by his own. You know, by what he is rather than what's pinned on his chest. And although there is a scene where when they're in the department store and Andrea wants to take the locket for her sister and she kind of looks, she's like, I don't want to, 'cause there's a cop standing next to me. And, right. and Rick says, I don't think those rules apply anymore.
Yeah.
Which is weird. It seems like something that was intentionally written to like make it okay that people are looting in this. I mean, they're looting of people who are dead probably. So it doesn't matter. But it seems to me like they had to have either a cop or the fact that he's a noble man anyway, like a guy with a good moral compass, say it's okay for the part of the audience to be able to buy it. What do you think?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the scenes I like the most is where Glenn finds an engagement ring for Maggie.
Yeah.
He takes it off
one of the walkers walking. Yeah. Cuts off her finger.
Yeah. That's kind of gross. But
like, I hope you cleaned this.
Yeah.
I know. I was thinking the same thing.
But I was thinking they should have written in, you know, if I were going to write fan fiction, I would have a scene where they come across a cop who's still in uniform and still acting like a cop and sees them using those silenced pistols and says, those are illegal weapons, and tries to arrest them and they just shoot him.
I have that in Survivor, Max. One of the reasons that they take Max and they have him in quarantine, he's like, you have no right to hold me here. And the cops are like, yeah, I do. I got you on possession of a firearm in a gun-free zone.
Yeah. So I want to talk in general for the rest of the show and probably for the rest of the week about why this show is so popular and why now, other than that it's a great show. One thing we could start with is it's kind of interesting to me the different types of characters that they've written into there that I think would actually exist in a breakdown of society in a given group. Who's the guy that I can't remember his name, the older guy, he's probably about 55, who's carrying
Dale,
a rifle all
with the
time.
Fisher hat?
Yes.
Dale
is the nanny stater. Mm-hmm. Dale is the one that's always telling everyone what to do. Sometimes mm-hmm. he's right, but he's often just being a nanny stater, and he does carry a rifle, but he totally seems to me like he probably before the apocalypse was, you know, a Southern Democrat who would never carry a pistol and thinks guns should be regulated, but has a hunting rifle and goes hunting once every couple of years.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Although he kind of grows out of it. Like he gives Andrea her pistol back and he says it wasn't right for me to take this.
Yeah, I guess he does. And you know, there's a summation in Family Guy of the hero's journey that Stewie the baby says to the dog when he's making fun of him for saying he's writing a novel and not writing it. And it's dead on. And it's so, I repeat it to people who want to learn how to do storytelling. It's friends become enemies, enemies become friends, everyone's a little richer for the experience.
Right.
Wow.
Of course, Dale has to learn a lesson, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so I think that there would be the problem of the, you know, the in a given group of six or eight people in the apocalypse, I think there would be a nanny person. I think there would be a natural leader like Rick. I think there would be a Shane, you know, someone who's an alpha male who wants to be a leader but doesn't really have the chops to be for people that want to follow him, you know.
Although Rick is pretty
sounds
much
familiar.
Like Shane
by the end.
I don't know. I think Rick still has a conscience.
He just makes choices he wouldn't have made in the first season.
Yeah.
He's not
he's
like
still
Shane.
Human. Yeah, he's
I don't
human.
I don't think he would have slept with his best friend's wife when the guy was gone for a couple days.
No, probably not.
Yeah. And I think every season there's somebody who kind of represents the conscience of the group. Like Dale was like that, even though he was a nanny stater, he was kind of the conscience, like telling people, you know, this is wrong, this is right, blah, blah, blah. And then it was Herschel. And now it's Tyrese. I feel like Tyrese represents the conscience of the group.
Yeah, I'm so tired of Tyrese.
Really? Like, why? Because, I love him.
Because he keeps getting over the same lesson, right? And he doesn't commit. So it's like, He has learned that he needs to kill walkers, and then he's like, oh no, I can't do it anymore. And he has Carol go and take out this walker on the train tracks. And then it's like, he has this guy who's saying, I'm going to eat your baby.
And he doesn't kill him. And you don't know that he doesn't kill him until he shows up with grilling Bob's foot.
Right. Yeah. And then there's no remorse for that. There's no I should have. There's no I was wrong to not take out this person.
I thought he did show remorse with
Sasha gives him that crazy look of like, well, are you crazy? What are you telling me right now? He's like, maybe I was right, maybe I was wrong. It's like he doesn't know.
I'm looking at a meme that someone made of Tyrese holding the baby. He's got his rifle on the back and he looks very protective. And it says, Tyrese, still a better mom than Lori.
Yeah, that's the thing. Tyrese is literally the nanny of the show.
He's the nanny, literally. Yeah, he's also not very smart. And he's, you know, he kind of knows it because his every situation he's in, he's like, what can I do? I'll do anything. I can help out. I just want to earn my keep, you know, which is a smart, dumb guy thing to do. But he doesn't really have anything to offer other than he's a big guy who can lift things, you know.
I still think
maybe it's my feels or whatever it is, but I still think that he's like the one that's like in this season or that last, or yeah, this, I guess, ongoing season that is kind of trying to help people to remain human in all of this, you know, remain like,
yeah, he's the heart. He's
he's the heart.
Every group needs that. I want
a character that shows us that being ethical and having a conscience is still practical. Yeah. And I feel like they're showing us that anybody who is still sentimental about human life is a weakling who needs other people to protect them. And I just don't like that message.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think Rick definitely has some of that, and so do the others. I mean, they still have that, but well,
Well, Davi, if you don't like it, why don't you write your own zombie books?
I've already done that. You know? Yeah. Although I don't have a Tyrese character, maybe I need one.
Yeah,
because we need the feels, okay?
We need the feels. Yeah. So why do you guys think this show is? Oh, go ahead, Davi.
I was going to say they're the only family left.
Yeah.
Other than Rick and Carl and Judith, you have Sasha and Tyrese. You don't have Beth anymore. You don't have.
Oh my gosh.
Ugh. There's no families left. The Green family is down to one. There you go.
Yeah.
I think it's popular because people know it's inevitable.
Yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah. I think everyone knows where it might not be a zombie outbreak, but it's some kind of collapse scenario. And when it happens, they're going to be like, man, I'm glad I watched that show because now I know that you can start a fire with a battery and a pack of gum.
But can you?
I don't know. I'm going to try.
Have you ever tried?
I think you should try.
I think.
I've seen it in other shows, but I don't know. Yeah, there's also somebody starts a fire with a mirror, which I don't think you can do. You can do it.
It was the rear view mirror of a car.
Yeah, you can do it.
I don't think I believe it.
With a magnifying glass.
You can do it with magnifying glass, and you can do it with some eyeglasses if they're a strong enough prescription. But yeah, not a mirror. Yeah. Maybe a conical, a curved mirror you could where it concentrates it. But a mirror
convex
is just,
or whatever it is.
Yeah, a concave mirror. I mean, a regular flat mirror, you know, on a car, actually, it would scatter it because the rear view mirror on a car is convex, not concave. It spreads light out, doesn't concentrate it, which is why objects in the rear view mirror appear closer, further than they are or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think another reason the show is pop. Go ahead, Diana.
I was just going to say I agree. Like going back to the point that Davi made about that people think, you know, realize it's kind of inevitable that something is kind of bound to happen at some point.
I think offers. I think along that line, it offers something for everybody too. Like anybody who has any inkling of prepperism in them, or anybody who owns a gun and thinks it could be useful in any emergency, it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. You know, those people, us people love it for that. Like, you know, like I have a Mosin Nagant that has the sticker on the end of it, the bayonet. And I think like, what would I ever need a bayonet for? But I need it for zombies, man.
For sure.
And the other group of people, you know, the other half of the world, the people who don't want to have guns and never have guns, who are like urban people who don't work for a living and, you know, work in computer science or whatever and think guns are dumb. I think the show has kind of a, like, it touches a primal thing that's still in people of like, yes, manly men building their own fires and fishing, you know, people want to do that. That's why the shows on Discovery Channel are popular. Like,
hey, chicks do it on there too.
Yep.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast,
even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Hey, this is Squisklar Squigelts from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
That's what the $11,000 Indiegogo went to. No one knows what I'm talking about, and I'm not going to say, but crane shots. That's when they spent the $11,000 on 3 days of crane rental and a crane operator, I think. All right. We're not talking about, we're not talking about that. We're talking about Walking Dead. And, you know, the founding fathers of America spoke of the union of the Republic as 13 laboratories of democracy. Basically, like, the states could each do what they want and figure out what works best, and people could vote with their feet and move as long as they weren't owned by the founding fathers. Mm-hmm. That's my little problem with, like, talking about those guys as liberty guys, is a lot of them owned people, which is kind of creepy.
Yeah.
So
didn't see them as people, so, you know.
They were only three-fifths of a person. Yeah. You can own three-fifths of a
Apparently.
Person.
Apparently. Too soon? All right, speaking of slavery, there is slavery in Walking Dead, soft slavery and hard slavery.
There is, that's true.
And zombie slavery. But we want to talk about the different laboratories of not quite democracy, the laboratories of different ways of...
It's the laboratory of this ain't a democracy anymore.
This ain't a democracy. Well, there are some democracies because, you know, they say basically like democracy is, you know, 51, you know, two wolves and a sheep voting on what they have for dinner.
Right.
And there's a lot of that. Not just from zombies, but from humans. But tell me the different scenarios and give me a thumbnail sketch of what each location's political
This is one of the more interesting things about the show, is that it is like laboratories of how people are organizing once this system collapses. Mm-hmm. And so you have like
and
Woodbury.
you did say that people like this show during the break. You said people like this show because you said before the break that it's inevitable. But you said during the break that people don't like the way things are run for them by their governments around the world. And it's not just libertarians and ANCAPs and voluntarists who think that. Like statists, liberals and conservatives hate the way the government's being run, and they think it needs to be fixed. And
so they want to see alternatives.
They think it can be fixed.
Yeah. Zombie apocalypse. I vote for that.
Yep. I'm ready.
Real quick. Do you know? Don't give me a spoiler alert. But from reading the comics, do you know what caused the zombie outbreak?
No.
Okay. Go on. Okay, tell me your laboratories of democracy.
Well, so you have Woodbury, which is essentially like it's an authoritarian kind of it's a dictator, right? Like the governor is not elected.
It's not North Korea though. It's more like Nazi Germany, I would say.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know, because he's a charismatic leader. Like people believe
and
that
Nazi Germany did not have a charismatic leader. I mean, I don't know if there is a counterpart, but
I think it's more like Rome.
Yeah,
because he has the Colosseum.
The chosen people are not starving too.
Yeah, that's true.
Society so then you is have providing.
The, the prison, which is it begins as a rictatorship, but then it ends in a council.
Did you just make that up on the fly? That's awesome.
No, that's essentially right after Rick said this ain't a democracy anymore, all the fans started calling it a rictatorship.
Awesome.
You have the RV park where they talk about electing a leader, but
which is
then,
kind of a military dictatorship.
Yeah, well, the governor comes in and kills the leader.
Yeah.
And then he says, like, we'll vote on this tomorrow, but for now, I'm in charge.
Yeah.
You have the claimers, which is like a property thing. Like, even though, like, Joe is kind of the alpha, he's not really a leader exactly. Like,
they're
kind of
like
follows the same rules.
They're kind of like some motorcycle gangs, too.
Yeah. And then you have the hospital, and the hospital is just straight up slavery. It's police run slavery.
Yeah. But it's kind of. It's kind of soft slavery, you know. It's real slavery. Like, you can't
leave.
Well,
they claim people, though. Yeah, like, different people. Officers claim the patients as their servants.
Yeah.
So, that's or true. Sex slaves.
Yeah.
So, I think that's regular old chattel slavery.
Yeah, I forgot. I forgot about that. Yeah.
What else do you got? I mean, there are all of these sorts of, I guess you have Terminus, which is the sort of like the
cannibal what is that? Thing.
I call that, I say that's a cross between, a Brooklyn hipster internet startup and a concentration camp.
Yeah. It's a fascist gap. That's what it is.
What I would like to know about Terminus is what happened to them to make them
show
like
that
because
they show that basically they were at the beginning. Terminus was the hipster people running it.
The Starbucks baristas.
Yeah, the Starbucks baristas running it equitably as their signs advertise. And then some rough men came in and took them over and made them slaves and sex slaves. Yeah. And then they had an uprising and killed those guys and then
ate them and learned
from them and became harder and creepy.
Right,
yeah. Creepy.
I just thought there would be more to the story than that.
There is, but it's really brief. There's two little scenes, but yeah. All right, it's been a great show. We're going to be back with more zombies tomorrow. Thank you, Diana. Thank you, Davi.
Thank you, Michael. Worms.